We give thanks for God's word as we come together this morning in these texts that have been read by Gladys as we continue in this series of stewardship messages through the month of November on faith and finances. Andrew has allowed you to peer into the box of our world or part of our world this morning. Today we talk about and reflect upon what it means to be rich toward God. The writer of Proverbs proclaims, as Gladys read, "Honor the Lord with your substance, with the first fruits of your produce. Then your barns will be filled with plenty." Last week in worship and afterwards, we celebrated the fullness of this year as we are in the midst of seeking and discovering the new thing that God is doing in our midst. Our lives and the life of this church are constantly shifting and changing these days. We see it in the news of the day. We see it in the prayer concerns that we bring, the situations of people's lives that come so quickly into our lives. And it is into this mix that this parable comes this week to keep us reflecting upon that message. A few weeks ago, Reverend Barbara Brown Taylor spoke in Boston at the invitation of the Massachusetts Bible Society, and her subject was parables and parabolic faith, she called it. We are invited into such a faith this morning as we consider Jesus' response to this man in the story, because parables invite us into change, to the opportunity to look at ourselves in new ways. They start a conversation, maybe unsettle us even a little bit, and trust the listener, all of us who gather here, to deal with the message. They give us food to chew on and to find ourselves in the story. I was tempted, as we looked at this text, to ignore the question that Jesus is asked before he tells the parable and just concentrate on the parable. But in our study together in the passage this week with Pastor Dave and Elena, our organist, we actually spent quite a bit of time talking about this question that Jesus is asked and why he's asked such a weird question that doesn't seem to have anything to do with the story he then goes on to tell. It's a curious story Jesus tells in his answer to the man who asks him to meditate on what looks to us as an inheritance dispute. A man comes to Jesus and asks him to tell his brother to divide the family inheritance. Why? Is the other brother not giving him his fair share? Does the brother asking Jesus want more than he's entitled to? According to Jewish custom, the oldest brother gets twice the inheritance of the younger. Maybe this man has heard that Jesus is more fair than the older brother. Is the man asking Jesus to make that law more fair? We don't know. But we can imagine that this dispute over the inheritance has caused some tension between these brothers. Maybe you've even seen that at work in your own life at times. Money, or the lack thereof, has a way of dividing person, from separating one from another. But does it have to be that way? So Jesus starts this story by attending to a question about relationship. And I think we must not forget the importance of relationship with one another as we enter into this parable. Pastor Dave and I are meeting with an inquirer's class right now, and we're hearing from the members of the inquirer's class how important it has been to them in coming to this community that we appear to be a community that is friendly, that we come to meet and actually get to know people that are coming here, that we care for one another, as witnessed in our prayers and joys and concerns, prayers that I know people take home with them and continue to pray in the week. We certainly hope and pray that that is genuinely true. It's also true that this kind of living together and care together for one another is something which should be shared, not just for us in this place. We must constantly be reaching out with love to a hurting community and world to really get to know and care for one another here in this midst. It has also been true in this community that this church has had the impulse to share what we have, to give of time, talents, and monies, to needs that are near and far, and to be open in our eyes to those needs, to help others to live lives in the fullness of God, and to trust in God fully and boldly. We have ample opportunity in this church to go out and trust God to provide, to trust God fully and boldly. As Pastor Dave mentioned and brought to our attention in prayers this week in the news from Head Start, we have more to pray about. In the at least 6 years that Head Start has been with us, they have now moved out as a new entity has taken over Head Start Providence Management. We came first to that relationship because they had lost space in another church. We've had a relationship with those teachers and even at times the families in the program through these years, and on Monday morning they were just gone of this week. A mission to serve the children of this neighborhood, many of whom walk with parents to the center and we greet as we walk up to this church. Yes, we will probably and maybe lose income from the rent that we were paid with them, but we've also lost a relationship, a wonderful relationship with a church that, or with a school that, as Dr. Duff can attest to, in 2006 suffered many ups and downs with this building, with us. We actually had to move out of the building twice because of lead in our water and a broken sewage pipe. Some of you who haven't been here that long don't remember that. Some of us would like to forget it. But through it all, their gracefulness, their grace, and their rebuilding of the kitchen after that, those will be losses in the relationship, not just in the financial part that they have played in this piece. I would say that we were rich toward God in our relationship with Head Start for these years, and they were rich toward us. And we may need to be rich toward God in some new ways and do new dimensions and have the opportunity to be that in the days to come. I think Jesus speaks a word to us through this parable. We have been richly blessed in the people who have come to call this community their home of faith, all kinds of people in all kinds of circumstances, united in a passionate desire to follow Jesus Christ and to discover what God has in mind for each one of us, to laugh, to cry, to play, and to pray together, to be generous with our time and our gifts and talents and financial resources. We are certainly a people who have experienced abundance in the blessing of this community, with many who show us what it means to trust God in all of life. Yes, Jesus has a word for us in this parable. What do we do with that abundance? Where do we find ourselves in this story? The man who produced abundantly decides that the answer is to store up all of his possessions, only he doesn't have enough space. Imagine the energy that goes into pulling down the old and building bigger and bigger barns. And for what? Jesus says. You fool, Jesus says. This day your very life is demanded of you. And the things you have prepared, whose will they be? Again, he's pointing to that relationship that's there. One can imagine this man in solitude, we don't know anything about his family, rebuilding his barns, concentrating on himself alone as he counts his money by himself. Those of us who heard Anna Baltzer on Thursday night speak of the challenges of life in Palestine, Gaza, and the West Bank in these days, we're reminded that it's all too easy to concentrate on ourselves, to keep the world out there, and to not engage circumstances far worse than our own, to turn inward. After all, don't we have enough to face already? We don't know what's coming our way next, and we can never know. This week has certainly shown us that. We can also become so focused on the fear of the unknown and what is ahead and our own security that we lose sight of the present and the blessings and the abundance that is here in our midst. We never really know what's right around that corner. Ask anyone who has had a sudden illness or death strike, as we saw even in this community just a few short weeks ago in the loss of Christina Mensa. Ask anyone whose energy has been focused on looking and looking for a job and finally finds the one that they've been waiting for. All of life gives us the opportunity to see if we are being rich toward God. Jesus speaks a word to us as individuals then and as a community and challenges us to keep our focus on that, to be rich toward God. Are you ready today, should your life be demanded of you, to answer that you have lived a life rich toward God? But how do we do that? First, I think we need to recognize that it is an orientation. It's a movement, not a destination. The man in our scripture was told, "You fool, don't just sit back and say, okay, now I can eat, drink, and be merry." He's not moving forward. The opportunity to be rich toward God is the opportunity to be constantly asking and refining, what is this ministry and mission to which God is calling me and us? The parable points us to some areas to look. First of all, it points us to connecting to God and one another. Goes back to that relationship thing in the first question that prompts this parable. Relationships with our family, our communities, and our world. As we learn to connect locally, we can connect globally. And it's found the foundation of those relationships, however hard they may be, is a trust in a God that is beyond ourselves. To trust God and even one another, and to look for ways in which we can respect and live and care and open ourselves to new connections. What is happening in your life these days? And where are you connecting? Secondly, being rich toward God may not mean that we will be rich in the things that society values. Head Start, for us, was more than a rent relationship. The richness of that relationship is not just its monetary value. And as you learned this morning from my husband Andrew, it's not about stuff. Our stuff can clutter our focus, and most of us could simplify the stuff of our lives tremendously. I continue to mull over the sermon that we heard last year in our stewardship month from Reverend Glenn Ramsey of how much stuff we have, and that's management can take us away from asking and really dealing with that question. What does it mean to be rich toward God? It certainly took that away for the man in our parable, for his whole focus was on managing his stuff. In the end, our security does not rest in what we have, for this very day our life may be demanded of us. Pastor Joe Miller, who was the previous pastor, co-pastor in this church, used to have a saying, and he had a way of putting things into very short, succinct phrases. He used to say, "There are no pockets in shrouds." John Ortberg, who preached this last summer to the Global Mission Fellowship, says, "When it's all over, it all goes back in the box." Too many of us plan for well beyond what we need. Ask anyone who has experienced the sudden death of a loved one. Yes, there may be and are very often financial implications in that, but in most cases, it's the loss of the relationship and the connection which is most grieved in that loss. Life and priorities towards money never look the same again. Finally, being rich toward God and reminding you that being rich toward God is an orientation. It implies a movement, a destination, not an arrival, reaching out in new ways. The very best that we have should be focused towards God, and that's where we should find our richness. Our first efforts, not what is left over when we've lived the way that we want to. I've been reading recently a book titled Tribal Church Ministering to the Missing Generation, which was written by Reverend Carol Merritt, who was the former pastor of Barrington Presbyterian Church in our neighborhood. Carol was the first colleague to tell me that I was, and to tell me rather gently, she did at first, that I was no longer in the younger generation of pastors. And she writes about ministry to younger persons in their 20s and 30s in our churches. In one of the passages that I read this week, she writes this: everything constantly changes around us. Even the most basic things in our lives, like the way we communicate with friends or where we live, are quickly shifting. We never step into the same river twice. Yet somehow in this vital generation, this fluid motion exposes the roots that ground us. When all of the extraneous soil has been cut back, we long to be spiritual people anchored in our life-giving traditions. We are left with the heart of our practice, to love God and love our neighbor. To love God and to love our neighbor. Jesus said these are the two greatest commandments. And I believe it's at the heart of what it means to be rich toward God. In this stewardship season, I challenge each one of us to reflect upon how we are living lives rich toward God, and how that translates into our lives in this community of faith and the resources that we bring together in bringing the first fruits to God. Let us journey together through all of the twists and turns of life that come to us as we follow where God would lead us in relationship, in turning outward and simplifying, in reaching out